This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Scarcity of ingredients. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Last weekend in February, here's what's coming up this hour.
One of the reasons it's been difficult for some people to get vaccinated is because certain niche biotech components have been hard to find. We'll explain.
With the Summer Olympics on the horizon, the world's most decorated gymnast has been unable to compete. Here are the issues facing Simone Biles and others.
A California couple embracing van life hits the road next month in a completely remodeled 1954 school bus. Here are all the modern amenities.
And how the loneliest class in Congress is struggling to make friends.
Really, the way it's brought people together, it's on the Democratic side. And Democrats sort of came into it a little disunified, disappointed in the November election, at least in the House, where they lost seats, and then came out of it completely unified and together.
Jim Saxa at CQ Roll Call on how COVID-19 and the Capitol riot have impacted freshman relationships in Congress. Well, here's a big reason for the sometimes slow rollout of the COVID vaccines in the U.S. Lipid nanoparticles for RNA vaccines were used in small quantities a year ago. Now, Pfizer and Moderna can't get enough. That's put pressure on a tiny company in Vancouver. It's a story by Chris Rowland, business of health reporter at The Washington Post. Chris, what have you found?
You know, one of the big hurdles for vaccine production when you're going from zero to, you know, over a year's time, hundreds of millions of doses is the question of raw materials. So, you know, after these mRNA vaccines were approved in record time by the FDA for Pfizer and Moderna, these companies had many problems that they still had to overcome, and raw materials were a big part of that. There's just not that many places that produce the specialized ingredients that go into mRNA vaccines, which are a novel kind of vaccines that have never been tried before.
Yeah. All right, so you focus on this company connected to the University of British Columbia called Acuitas Therapeutics, right?
That's right. Yeah, they're a very tiny little company. It just has 30 employees based on the University of British Columbia campus in Vancouver. And it is really just, you know, it's an academic spinoff. There's a group of researchers in British Columbia who have been studying lipid nanoparticles, which is the technical term for the vehicle that the mRNA travels in inside your body to get into cells. And then stimulate an immune response. And these lipid nanoparticles have been under research for decades, but have never seen a mass demand and, you know, mass production demand before. And so it's new. This little company, Acuitas, has, you know, used contract manufacturers before, and there's only a couple in the United States and several in Europe that are that fill this small little biotech niche. And so, you know, you're talking about volumes of substance that was needed to ramp up production and, you know, in huge amounts really fast. And so it explains really one of the big bottlenecks and why people have been frustrated about the lack of supply. It's just tough to, like, you know, build this fire truck while you're headed to the fire.
Yeah, geez. So has that company's size hurt them as they try to help vaccinate the whole world?
Well, it's so the smallness is the kind of the is emblematic of that this particular niche of lipid manufacturing is, you know, kind of a nascent industry, and it still hasn't, you know, taken off, and it hasn't been purchased by much larger manufacturers with a global presence. you know, the big multinationals and stuff. There are now some multinationals that are beginning to get into this space because of the demand, but that takes time. There's literally just not enough factory floor space and enough machines and enough, you know, raw material ingredients to make these lipids. I guess I should step back a little bit and say, like, so there's four lipids that are required. Lipids are these, is a fat molecule, essentially. And there's four of them that are required to make a lipid nanoparticle, which is like a little bubble that encases the mRNA, which then goes into the body and goes into the human cells. And one of those lipid nanoparticles is a patented by Acuitas, and it's called an ionizable cationic lipid. And that is the particularly rare and scarce raw ingredient that people are having trouble finding.
Boy, we're speaking with Chris Rowland, business of health reporter at The Washington Post. His piece is called Why Grandparents Can't Find Vaccines, Scarcity of Niche Biotech Ingredients. So you hinted at it there a little bit. This is not the only bottleneck, obviously. You said, too, the lack of machine capacity to even fill vaccine vials.
Yeah, so there's multiple bottlenecks. And, you know, the way the companies have described it to me is like once you solve one bottleneck, you find another.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Rowland, business of health reporter at The Washington Post. Coming up next, the loneliest Congress in history. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. This might just be the loneliest Congress in memory, thanks to last month's riot and COVID rules. With roughly five dozen new lawmakers in their second month in office and trying to settle into the House, they're asking what it means for the future. Insight from Jim Saxa, reporter at CQ Roll Call. Jim, what's up here?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to January 6th and the storming of the Capitol, it was a truly traumatic event. But, you know, when you go through shared adversity, it can be a real bonding experience. It's, you know, sort of the basis of military indoctrination and frat hazing, right? Like when you go through something that, you know, is objectively, you know, difficult, it can really bring people together. And a lot of members, gave a couple of stories that I talked to about how, you know, other members went out of their way to, you know, check in on them and see how they're doing. But really, the way it's brought people together, it's on the Democratic side. And Democrats sort of came into it a little disunified, disappointed in the November election, at least in the House, where they lost seats, and then came out of it completely unified and together.
Do they find that it's hard meeting folks just because many are behind a mask at all times? It's hard to remember a face, maybe.
Yeah, I've heard I spoke to about a dozen freshman representatives for the story, and I heard a couple of times, you know, just having difficulty putting names to faces behind a mask. But yeah, really, in general, the COVID protocols make it difficult to socialize. And, you know, anyone that has a kid, you know, starting in a new school, you know, can attest to this. You know, when you can't talk face to face, when you can't, you know, hang out in the hallways or after a vote, and, you know, a lot of the social activities that they plan during the freshman orientation, they do an orientation that's not unlike a college orientation. You know, a lot of the like happy hours and things like that were canceled, you know, because they would be spreader events. And because of that, these guys are sort of behind the peers and where they would be in terms of getting to know, you know, other members of their class.
Wow. We're speaking with Jim Saxa, reporter at CQ Roll Call. He's written a piece entitled Loneliest Class in Congress Wonders How to Make Friends. So something stood out to me in your story where you quoted somebody who actually questioned whether or not it's worth trying to make friends across the aisle.
Yeah, I quoted Richie Torres, who does come from literally the most Democratic-leaning district in the U.S. But that was a sentiment that I heard from a few others as well. Really, a lot, it's not everyone across the aisle, I should be clear. What they are questioning is whether they can work with the Republicans who objected to the electoral vote count on the 6th. They see that as a red line, that isn't like disagreeing over tax policy or the minimum wage. That is a red line about disagreeing about a fundamental tenet of democracy to them. And with that, that was a sentiment that I really heard a couple of times, and it wasn't like a just only the people on the far left were saying. A bunch of moderates were saying that they wanted some sort of accountability for those that encouraged through their actions and their statements, whether intentionally or not, the storming of the Capitol on the 6th.
Jeez. That says to me, I guess, that the January 6th rioting will hang in the air for a long time with this particular class in Congress.
I think it will be a defining moment for this class and will probably be something that will be remembered for a long time and will take a long time to get past. One of the interesting things I heard is that Democrats said, we want accountability. And they asked, I asked, what does that look like? And there's a whole range, from wanting to kick out some members that are particularly extreme, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, to just wanting a public apology. But what they are hearing right now from the Republicans is no interest in making public apologies or standing down from their positions, which they say, also reflected the concern for democracy and the validity of the vote counts, despite the fact that there was no evidence of widespread fraud in this year's election.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Saxa at CQ Roll Call. Coming up next, the struggle to prep for the Olympics.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and proven adaptability are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
As she prepares to step into the Ariake Gymnastics Center in Tokyo at the Olympic Games this summer, Simone Biles is contending with something totally unfamiliar. The most decorated female gymnast in world championship history has not competed since October 2019, and she's not alone. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
While many professional sports leagues have played through the pandemic, many elite Olympic athletics have been sidelined for more than a year. And as Louise Radnofsky of the Wall Street Journal tells us, the lack of competition in the run-up to the Summer Games could have some big implications. Louise, what have Olympic athletes been able to do in the last year?
The short answer to that is not very much indeed. We've talked to some athletes who have found themselves training in the LA streets, breaking into tracks and having the police called on them. And in the case of the gymnast Simone Biles, who we talked to for this story, she hasn't had competition since October 2019. She's been in her gym, but in her case, she's been able to use the lack of immediate deadlines to train something really spectacular. A new vault that she says wouldn't have been possible if she'd had her normal busy schedule. So there have been some clear difficulties for some athletes. There have been difficulties for all athletes, but some of them have also found some opportunities in here. And I think the result is that if the Tokyo Games go ahead in the summer, we could see some really interesting outcomes that we perhaps didn't expect 18 months ago.
Do we think there will be any competitions heading into Tokyo?
There are plans for some domestic competitions in the U.S., and indeed Allyson Felix was able to get her first competition in for a very long time last Sunday. The plan for Snowbiles is to take part in some domestic competitions, and if an international opportunity presents itself that she can do safely, they want to do that too. The thinking being the Olympic Games is not really where you want to be trying out something brand new in front of an international judging panel for the first time. But look, these are athletes who have learned very much the hard way over the last year that you can make plans and expect something to happen, and that doesn't mean it's going to. So hoping for competition opportunities and expecting them are not necessarily the same thing at this point.
We're speaking with Louise Radnofsky of the Wall Street Journal. And Louise, as you mentioned, in sports, we've seen a lot of schedules, especially in the collegiate level, really pivot and within hours, and games are added and competitions are scrapped and new events are happening. Is it possible to add events at this late date that we don't even know about when it comes to Olympic competition?
We don't know. There's certainly been a lot of events canceled, as you noted. In some cases, the cancellation could provide the basis for an event to be restaged. And we've also seen some people, particularly at the collegiate level, think very creatively about how to hold competition and really pull it together over the weekend, possibly even by advertising on Twitter in some case. Anyone want a game? Judge sports are also really interesting. Gymnastics and figure skating, which I also write about, being the best two examples. In figure skating, one of the things they've done is virtual competition where athletes have filmed their routines under proctored exam-like settings and then submitted them for a remote panel of judges to assess them and give out scores. So that is an option in some sports. Obviously, that's a lot harder to do in something like track.
Yeah, I was going to say, in some sports, maybe competing against yourself is good enough, but in others, you really need to have the competition against others to prepare for the Summer Games.
You do. And the other thing that the long layoff has really done for some athletes is created a very different set of circumstances, and they've made life changes accordingly. So in the story we write about a marathoner who got pregnant after the games were postponed. She had already qualified for the marathon by winning the U.S. Olympic marathon trials back in February. And by now, she is the mother of a baby girl. That baby girl will be 6 months old by the time her mother actually gets the chance to run in Tokyo. So the window has certainly created some very unusual circumstances that we don't usually see in the run-up to the Olympics. That final year is normally for athletes a very busy, very structured, carefully planned calendar of events. And this year, it's just kind of a big unknown. And the results may make for some real surprises as well.
That's Wall Street Journal sports reporter Louise Radnofsky with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Fellas, it's 2021, the year of the rally, the one where we kick 2020 into the rearview mirror and start changing things for the better. So why not dress the part? Be the man that's always on this year with Cuts Clothing. They redesigned the simplest classics like the plain tee from the ground up, combining cutting-edge fabric technology with intelligent, minimalist design to get the next-level comfort you have to wear to believe. The one that I love for winter is the new hoodie. The Hyperloop French Terry fabric they developed not only feels buttery soft like the signature Pika fabric on their shirts, but it's temperature-controlled. You never have to take it off. And just like me, you won't want to. Entrepreneurs, mavericks, athletes, podcast hosts, everyone loves Cuts. They're echoing GQ. It's the only shirt worth wearing. Let's kick off 2021 the right way, starting with your wardrobe. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Last weekend of February, Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka coming up this half hour. The need for social media protection. We'll explain what that means. Also, offers to refinance your student loans for cash might not be a good deal. We'll have analysis. Plus, fast food fans demanding the return of old favorites. And road tripping in a refurbished school bus from the 50s. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Recently, one of the most popular actors out of the Mandalorian Lucasfilm TV series was terminated because of a tweet. Gina Carano is far from the first and likely will not be the last. She wasn't just terminated. When a major studio like this fires you, getting work as an actor may become very difficult. Tech analyst Rob Enderle says this outcome could have been prevented with an AI tool. Rob, explain.
So she's actually gotten in trouble a couple times. She's fairly far on the right. And so she had some questionable posts early on where she was notified that she needed to dial it back. And then she issued a post that compared people on the right to Jews that were persecuted during the Third Reich, during Hitler. It, as you would guess, anytime you're posting something about Hitler and Jews and claiming that you're being oppressed just like the Jews were, it's probably not going to end well. And Disney has no tolerance for this. So you get the combination of somebody that's posting something that is arguably pretty, it's going to upset a lot of people, and you're working for a company that has zero tolerance for this kind of behavior, you're going to get fired.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of companies out there, a lot of them in media, that just don't have tolerance for this. We've certainly seen a lot of reporters, for instance, based on whatever their comments or their or something they posted off the job, be asked to either step down, go on leave, or get terminated. And the thing is, these are avoidable mistakes. People don't have to do these tweets, but they do have to recognize that their employer, if their employment is connected to the brand, has only one real recourse, and that's to terminate you. And at least my sense is that people realized that they were effectively resigning from their job. Actually, not so much resigning, because resigning doesn't do the damage to your career that this kind of does. But if you recognize that if you're going to do this tweet, you're probably going to get fired the next day. I would say probably 99.9% of the folks wouldn't do the tweet. And we do have the tools. We use them for reputation protection that can identify this and flag this kind of tweet. Currently, we identify and flag them. Those tools are used to let Disney know that employees are saying bad stuff and they need to be terminated. But that same technology can be turned over to let the employees know that what they're about to post is probably going to get them terminated,
I just get the sense it's not a perfected technology yet. Right?
Well, it just hasn't been applied this way yet.
Okay.
Certainly you could err on the side of being safe and just flag everything that looked even questionable, so that people are thinking about the fact that, you know, your mom's going to see this, your boss is going to see this, the CEO of your company may see this, your kids are going to see this, and you might want to rethink it, because the blowback could be significant for them, if not for you. I mean, there's a possibility you could get your spouse fired by something that you the tweet, if you're connected back to her and she's connected back to the brand, she or he. So it is my belief that most folks would just as soon not quit their jobs this way, and if you look at the damage that was done to Gina Carano, she's pretty much unemployable in the industry. I mean, she's pulled a gig with a right wing site, but she goes from movies that are going to pull audiences in the millions to audiences in the thousands, and so clearly her ability to earn revenue has gone down rather dramatically as a result, and pointlessly. The tweet that she made didn't really make a huge difference except for her career. And so what I'm just saying is we've got the capability, the same deep learning and machine learning tools that are used to notify companies that people are misbehaving can be also used, modified, and used to notify people that they're about to be terminated for what they're thinking of posting and maybe get them to rethink it. And all you'd have to do is put in a delay. So you hit something, you hit post, the system looks at it, comes back and says, you know, maybe you want to rethink. If you want to go ahead and post it, go ahead. But here are the things that are likely going to happen when this goes out.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. Coming up next, offers to refinance student loans.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt. And the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. If you have student loans, you may be fielding offers to refinance that debt, but experts say many may not see a lot of benefit from refinancing right now, especially in light of ongoing changes with federal student loans. Insight from Megan Lenhart, senior reporter at CNBC Make It. Megan, help us out.
So I think a lot of folks have been getting advertisements out the wazoo this year. I mean, certainly on, you know, refinancing their student loans, getting health insurance, getting homeowners insurance, you name it. We've gotten a lot of emails and messages in the mail these days about what to do with our money over the past year. But it's interesting with student loans, there's been a lot of refinancing offers. And, of course, it's kind of an interesting time in student loans, particularly if you have federal student loans, because there's been a lot of changes, new protections, new benefits that you might not want to give up if you refinance into a personal private loan.
Wow. All right. So back up one second, I guess. You can refinance, obviously, a private loan, but also a federal student loan, one from the government?
You can. You can do both. And there's a lot of organizations out there that are willing to walk you through and, you know, are very helpful if you do need to do that. A lot of times folks will not only refinance their federal student loans, but they may consolidate. Maybe they have a couple of federal loans. It's a lot easier if you have it all in one place, one bill, all of that. And so sometimes it does make sense to refinance. But in this case, you know, it really is very dependent on whether you have federal student loans or you have private student loans. Perhaps you have both. And so if you do get one of these offers, you need to look at it very closely, and you also need to figure out what works best for you and, you know, if there's any sort of fine print that you need to watch carefully.
We're speaking with Megan Lenhart, senior reporter at CNBC Make It. Her story is called Offers to Refinance Your Student Loans for Cash Might Not Be a Good Deal. Here's what experts say. I guess it's that type of period for us in the pandemic where folks may be looking for some extra cash and these things look attractive?
It does. I think there's been a couple recently. Mint certainly sent one out to their users last week. And, you know, they seem very attractive. The subject line on the email last week from Mint was, now may be a good time to refinance your student loans and get up to $400. And we've talked to a few experts and, you know, it's not unusual to have these companies sit there and offer some kind of cash bonus, cash benefit, whatever the case is, to refinance with them. And, it can help. I mean, it certainly, is $400 isn't anything to sneeze about. But you have to, again, read the fine print. In this case, they were only offering $400 for those who had loans above $100,000. That's not most people in this case. So, you know, much like credit card offers and things like that, when you get those lovely incentives to buy or spend $3,000 and then you may get $500, you have to weigh the cost-benefit analysis here.
Thanks, Megan. Megan Lenhart, senior reporter at CNBC Make It. Coming up next, consumers in desperation mode. The pandemic has left Americans with fewer choices, right? You've seen this from motorcycles to cookies. For food companies and restaurants, the reductions helped reduce the number of supplies kept on hand. For some consumers, being deprived, though, of their favorite fast food, cereal, or snack was too much, so they've started social media accounts and online petitions. It's a story by Heather Haddon, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Heather, what's trending?
A number of restaurant chains, food companies, really up and down consumer products, have tried to simplify their supply chains and offerings during the pandemic just because it scrambled operations so much. So part of doing that was removing options. So maybe selling one fewer type of cookie or you know, removing tab soda. And for restaurant chains, it was really reducing some of the options on their menus. So McDonald's stopped mandating across the country all day breakfast. It was, you know, scaled back in a much more targeted way, removed some regional items on menus. Taco Bell removed some items. Most of the big chains really did this after the pandemic hit, and a lot of them really like it. It's made running their kitchen simpler. It's reduced waste. It's helped with prep time and training. But, you know, there are people who notice these things. There's, you know, a consumer who just loves Panera's tortellini pasta, one of the people I talked to, and she was just so upset to find that it had been removed from Panera's menus during the pandemic, and she started an online petition, and hundreds of people signed it, and, you know, that's one of the smaller ones for the McDonald's petitions, Taco Bell. I mean, thousands of people have signed these petitions, and the companies do notice, so some of them have brought some menu items back, but some of them are sticking with it, so it's made for an interesting push-pull between the consumers and the companies.
Wow. We're speaking with Heather Haddon, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's got a story entitled, Where's My Midnight McMuffin? Fast food fans demand return of old favorites. So in which cases, for example, have the petitions worked, and in which cases have the company said, you know what, no, we're just not going to do that?
So Taco Bell is an interesting example. They have brought back, they're bringing back next month, actually in March, some options. I think it was like a particular taco and a potato option that some vegetarians really liked. They also said that they're going to introduce working with Beyond Meat and then eventually have some more plant-based proteins. But Mexican pizza, which is something that can also be made vegetarian, they have not brought back yet, and they're sticking with it. I mean, they've said, in addition to eliminating, helping with complexity, it's also eliminated waste because of the packaging. And there's just people who really love it and are really sad.
All right, so speaking of the McMuffin, McDonald's, as you said, almost gets called out daily, I guess, on a with regards to all-day breakfast on Twitter, right?
Yeah, no, there are people who really miss being able to have McMuffins at midnight. It was interesting to look at some of these tweets. You know, there's pregnant women who are craving it. There's people who are out late, and they tweeted the company. I mean, this is the power of these online petitions and social media. You can have access to these companies in a way a lot of consumers couldn't previously, and the companies respond. So this, you know, the official McDonald's Twitter account is spending a lot of time saying, you know, I'm sorry, we know you love it. We're trying to figure out how to bring it back, but, you know, no guarantees there. So the agitation continues.
Thanks, Heather. Heather Haddon, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, modern road trip, vintage vehicle. When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. We'll finish with this. A California couple is hitting the road in a 1954 school bus that they've completely remodeled. It once belonged to Josh Jackling's grandparents, who wore it out with their own road trips. Mr. Jackling and his wife, Carolyn McKenna, will use social media to document their travels for at least the next 2 years. The pistachio green bus has a battery and water storage tank that can last roughly 2 weeks, a fully functional bathroom with a heated shower floor, full kitchen, plus solar panels for electricity when they're off the grid. There's also a four-person bar, a wood-fired stove and grill, and built-in AC and heating for their van life. For lounging and resting, there's a queen-size bed, a couch, a dining area. Entertainment-wise, there's a TV and workspace where they can both use their computers. The pair told Fox News they agreed to go into their adventure debt-free, so they sold some of their belongings and rented out their home in order to get their arrangements together. Starting next month, the first trip will be up to Canada, then all the way to Alaska. Beyond that, is up in the air. You can follow them on Instagram, by the way, at Crowned in Style. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.